Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show, lots of good people involved. And the star of the program is Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. On today's program, Carol's going to be speaking with a really nice guy and a very successful media figure. His name is Brian Kilmeade. He's the co-host of Fox News Channel's morning show, Fox and Friends. He also hosts a nationally syndicated radio show titled Kilmeade and Friends. He's going to talk to Carol about his new book titled George Washington's Secret Six, The Spy Ring That Saved the American Revolution, which is published by Sentinel HC. Looking forward to that. But let's kick the show off right now with Carol Marks in conversation with a gentleman by the name of Alan Blinder. Alan Blinder is the Gordon S. Rentschler Memorial Professor of Economics and Public Affairs at Princeton University and the author of a book titled After the Music Stopped, The Financial Crisis, The Response, and the Work Ahead, published by Penguin Press.
You mentioned that there were at least seven major villains that helped to create this fragile house of cards on Wall Street. Can you name just one or two of them?
Yeah, well, I think the two biggest, so if you give me two, that's easy. One was the housing bubble itself. And a lot of that has to be blamed on us, like in the old Pogo cartoon. We met the enemy and it is us. Americans, and by the way, nationals of other countries also, this wasn't only in the United States, Americans just went hog wild over houses in the decade of the 2000s up to about 2006 or so. They looked at house prices going up, 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 and they decided, well, they'll just always go up, and therefore I should keep bidding up this house, and whatever it takes to buy it, I should pay. And house prices went up to dizzying heights. That was not going to remain the case. At some point, this was going to crumble. Nobody could quite predict when. Secondly, at the same time, roughly, it was what I call in the book the bond bubble. And what do I mean by that?
I never heard about the bond bubble till you wrote about it, and it was amazing.
Yes, that's the point. Nobody has heard about the bond bubble. Everybody knew about the housing bubble. So what was happening in the bond bubbles? People were, banks and investors were lending money to various parties. So some of them were corporations that, not the greatest corporations that were borrowing in the junk bond market. Some of them were mortgage securities, mortgage-backed securities, and what were called collateralized debt obligations, never mind what that is, and even more exotic things like that. Others were loans to emerging market governments. And the pricing of those bonds were reflecting very little risk, much less risk than was actually there. So financial market experts generally look at the difference between an interest rate and what the U.S. Treasury can borrow at. That's called the spread over treasuries. Those spreads got really narrow during the bond bubble to an extent that I and many others thought was crazy, but that's what the market was doing. And that was the other thing that was setting us up for a fall, because if the spreads are getting irrationally small, they're liable to widen. And when they widen, the lesser bonds, not the treasuries, but the other stuff, which included mortgage-backed securities, were destined to fall in value. And, of course, they did.
Now, let's look at something else that went on during our economic crisis, and that was the way two big banks, and they also did brokerage work, were handled. And they were Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers. And why were they allowed to collapse in such different ways?
Well, that is going to be a question for the ages. Ben Bernanke, now in his retirement, is going to be asked that many, many times, as Hank Paulson, who was Secretary of the Treasury at the time, was. And I think, and I make a major issue of this in the book, that it was a big mistake to treat them so differently. So how were they treated differently? In the case of Bear Stearns, which came to a head in March of 2008, the government, and it was specifically the Federal Reserve, came in with a loan to facilitate the transfer of Bear Stearns to J.P. Morgan Chase, a gigantic bank. So J.P. Morgan Chase, with government assistance, bought what was left of Bear Stearns and continued the businesses. When Lehman Brothers came to a head, when money was flying out of Lehman Brothers and you could see it was only days away from collapse, this is now September 2008, 6 months later, the government took an entirely different approach. It looked for a private buyer, but couldn't find one very easily. There was a possibility of selling it to Barclays, the British bank, but that involved some international complications. So at minimum, the Federal Reserve or some part of the government was going to have to bridge this loan. And at maximum, the Fed was going to have to loan directly to Lehman Brothers to keep it afloat. And they were not willing to do that. Mr. Paulson, Mr. Bernanke decided that not to do that, thereby taking a very different path than they had taken with Bear Stearns. This shocked the markets. The markets thought there was a precedent established by Bear Stearns and then continued with the saving of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac just shortly before Lehman Brothers. So they thought there was a precedent that gigantic financial institutions would not be allowed to go to bankruptcy court because that was just too dangerous. And they were shocked. Markets were shocked at the Lehman failure. And when markets are shocked, they tend to panic. And that's what happened.
And they sure did. And also in the book, you talk, and it's very interesting what you have to say about the Federal Relief Agency's Troubled Assets Relief Program, or it's known as TARP, and Managed Stimulus Plan, because they both got a lot of criticism. And what made you say that TARP, some people thought it was a failure, but you say it did well financially, but it could have done better. So what's the whole truth about it?
Well, I think the whole truth is that there are some things that could have been done better. For example, the upside that the taxpayer wound up getting could have been bigger on a better designed TARP. Executive pay should have been reined in by TARP, and there are a few other things. But all those are footnotes to what is really an overwhelming success. So if you think about what the TARP, the banking part, TARP later got used for many other things, but it started as a bank bailout, as it was. The government didn't want to call it a bailout, but everyone else called it a bailout. The bailout took the form of loans to banks, and in return for the banks that were traded on exchanges, which included all the big banks, they took stock options, which were, from which the government would profit if the bank survived and did well, and would lose if the bank failed. But the banks were not going to fail because the government was in there helping them not to fail. So A, it stopped the bleeding in the banking system, which was crucial because when the banking system is bleeding, we're all bleeding indirectly from loss of credit and drops in economic activity and job loss and so on. So that was its main purpose, and it achieved that very well. Secondly, it actually turned a profit in the end. So this myth, still widely believed, that the government gave away money to undeserving bankers is just completely false, except for the undeserving part. They were undeserving. They had made huge mistakes, and they deserved to be punished financially for their mistakes. I like to view that as collateral damage in the war to save the economy. So, yes, we did help bankers that didn't deserve the help, but the taxpayer wound up in the black at the end, actually turning a profit on this operation.
And I guess we had less unemployment than we might have had otherwise.
Mark Zandi, an economist with Moody's, and I wrote a paper in 2010, and we estimated that while, in fact, the unemployment rate maxed out at 10%, a horribly high number, without all of these government interventions, including the stimulus program of the early Obama administration, the unemployment rate might have reached 16 or 17%, which is just unspeakably bad.
I would say so. Now, I wanted to mention something that we haven't heard too much about, but we're going to hear a lot more, and that's the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform Act, which was supposed to make banks and Wall Street safer places for the people who invest in the products that they have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, why is it then that this act, which was passed in 2010, has had only 40% of the 400 regulations it's supposed to get passed, only 40% have been finalized? So that's not very helpful.
No, it's a very good question. So there are several salient reasons for this. One is that the Congress, now I'm going to sound a little partisan here, but it's hard not to, and this is mainly the Republicans in Congress, have gone out of their way to starve the regulatory agencies of budget to do their work. Now, that doesn't work on the Federal Reserve, which generates its own money and doesn't go to Congress for an appropriation. But it does work on a number of other agencies. So that's one. They didn't have enough people to do all the work assigned to them by Dodd-Frank. Second, we have too many financial regulatory agencies in the United States, another set of acts of Congress, by the way. And on many of the provisions, you need five or six regulatory agencies all to come to agreement on the same regulation. That takes time. Third reason is some of these regulations were just tremendously complicated, either at the detail levels, dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's, or even at the conceptual level. So the most famous example of the latter is the Volcker Rule, named after the great Paul Volcker, who thought correctly, I believe, that banks should not be gambling with insured money. You know, bank money is insured by the FDIC.
That's Alan Blinder in conversation with Carol Marks. His book is titled After the Music Stopped, The Financial Crisis, The Response, and the Work Ahead, published by Penguin Press. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor seat. You're listening to A Touch of Gray. The program continues with Carol Marks in conversation with Brian Kilmeade in just a moment.
Did you know? An estimated 16 million Americans suffer from a chronic inflammatory facial condition called rosacea, and most of them don't know it. Often mistaken for acne, there are many signs and symptoms of rosacea besides facial redness, pimples, and visible blood vessels. Other symptoms may include burning, stinging, swelling, and even enlargement of the nose. Rosacea can also affect the eyes, causing a bloodshot appearance and irritation that could lead to vision loss. Any one of these signs and symptoms can mean rosacea, and without medical help, it can become increasingly severe and wreak havoc on your personal and professional life. Rosacea typically appears any time after age 30. So if you experience any sign of rosacea, see a dermatologist for diagnosis and treatment. Or for more information, visit the National Rosacea Society at rosacea.org.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and it's time now for Carol Marks to interview Brian Kilmeade. He's the co-host of Fox News Channel's morning show Fox and Friends, and he also hosts the nationally syndicated radio show Kilmeade and Friends. He's going to talk to Carol about his new book titled George Washington's Secret Six, The Spy Ring That Saved the American Revolution. It's published by Sentinel HC.
It was during those very grim months in 1776, and George Washington and his troops had to beat a hasty retreat through New York City, and he had to deal with the loss of his first spy that he recruited, Nathan Hale. And so what led him to that aha moment when he said, I better set up a good espionage network in New York City?
Well, he knew he had to do it. He knew the virtues of that since the French-Indian War, and he knew that sending one guy there was a problem. He had to set up a network. He wanted it to be the first guy. I also found out later that he thought that Long Island would not be occupied by the British, just New York City. So when he put Nathan Hale there, he wouldn't have been in too much danger until he went to New York City. Instead, when Nathan Hale went to Long Island, he was in enemy territory immediately, and in 2 days caught, captured, and hanged on 66th and 3rd, and there's a little plaque there in Manhattan today. Well, when he gets hanged, Washington really took it personal. He said, I kind of blew it. And Benjamin Talmadge was commissioned to go get, along with somebody else who was not successful, to set up a ring, not one, but a ring. And Talmadge roomed with Nathan Hale, so this made a complete circle. So he was motivated, and he was by Washington's side the entire war. So then he goes and finds his buddy Abraham Woodhull, a farmer. But then they go get Austin Rowe, a tavern owner, Caleb Brewster, a longshoreman. Then they go out and get Robert Townsend. Robert Townsend had a dry goods store in Manhattan, was convinced to go work it again and talk to the British. And then also in Manhattan, James Rivington. He was the editor of a loyalist newspaper. So what do? You're behind enemy lines, you listen. You're behind enemy lines, you question. You have a reason to question, as Robert Townsend would later write for the Rivington Gazette. For James Rivington, he's got to get his newspaper done. He's got to talk to officers. So what do they have? A great cover story. Unbeatable, unbreakable. We were able to look into their daily planners and actually hold them back from the 1770s. And it talked about supplies being delivered to the tavern, to the grocery store, to the Rivington Place and Rivington Gazette. And guess what? If you have supplies being delivered, guess what also arrived the same day? Those letters. So we think those letters were jammed into flour and wheat and barley and brought back and forth that way.
It's amazing. And I bet you were really kind of shocked when you learned how relevant the Cobra spy ring was when it comes to the same techniques that are being used today by CIA agents that were used way back in the Revolutionary War. I mean, I found that incredible.
I mean, it's not my words. It's actually Washington. And then I went to CIA and I asked them, and they said, absolutely, the concept of dead drops, encryption, using invisible ink. We do stuff in electronically, hiding in... using the something equivalent of invisible ink now, the encryption where places are numbers and people are numbers instead of using their real names. And then you also have the hiding in plain sight theory of write a letter, make it just about the weather and about the family on one side, but on the other side you give me the intelligence, and that's in an invisible ink. And if someone pulls you over, you have a boring letter and you're going to be able to get through. Someone pulls you over, if it's written, if you have intelligence on there, you're dead, and so is your family.
It's amazing. And George Washington used another technique that I'm sure the CIA uses today, misinformation, when the British were going to go and try to ambush the French troops that had come to try to help him. He planted some stories that he was going to go and try to take back New York, and it worked.
Yeah, I mean, you really read the book. I mean, what he does is when he gets the information from the spy ring that they're on the move and they're going to go head off the French, he sends a young man with a satchel, and he goes right over to one of the checkpoints, and he turns over and says, look what I just found on the road. So it's a beat-up satchel. The guy's like, okay, thanks. They let the kid go on his way. They look inside. They see a beat-up map with Washington's handwriting on it. They quickly get it to their general, and it says, General, they are staging it. The Americans are coming, or the Patriots are coming. You have to bring the troops back. So up goes a flare. Those troops turn around, and they come back to hold off Washington's invasion, which never comes.
I found all the stories in the book so fascinating. And the fact, this is something I certainly didn't know. In fact, I didn't know about really any of them. But the fact that the Cobra spy ring really helped prevent Benedict Arnold from surrendering West Point to the British. And why would that have been such a disaster?
If you lose West Point, you lost the entire Hudson. I mean, that was a fortification that was just really for war, not for school. And it was kind of odd to see an accomplished general like Benedict Arnold say, yeah, give me that fort. I'll grab that. Yeah, you don't want any missions? No, I'll just take that. Meanwhile, all along, he planned on giving it to the British. So if they had gotten that, they might have, their goal was to not only get that, but when Washington went to visit, that's when they were going to come and take it. And Benedict Arnold not only was setting up to switch sides, he was setting up the giveaway of the fort and had invited Washington and Alexander Hamilton to visit him the very weekend in which he got caught.
And you know,
he escaped before getting caught.
Right. And that Cobra spy ring was remarkable because again and again, they were able to keep disastrous events from happening to the Patriots and really doing what they wanted to do, have an independent America.
Yeah, and I just think they're symbolic of America, too, because what do these guys do, five men and one woman? They want the entire war, didn't want any payment. They just wanted their expenses covered. They didn't want any acclaim or credit. In the end, they didn't even go out of their way to meet Washington. Washington went and stayed with Austin Rowe, the bartender, and Woodhull logically would have shown up. But he never met Robert Townsend, and we could tell. Rivington, he did have a chance to meet. Caleb Bruce was actually in the war, so we had a chance to meet him. But nobody said, hey, I spied during that time. They had took until 1930 for the spy ring to be exposed by Morton Pennypacker.
And thank goodness he did. And thank goodness that you wrote the book. And boy, you know, today we all would like to have an elected president who would have some of the great qualities Washington had. Confidence, fearlessness, and leadership. And he was a tall man, and he always rode in front of his troops, so he was a perfect target. So does anybody know why he never got wounded? Because so many generals did.
Man, you really know your work. I just came from Mount Vernon, and Washington, they went over with me. Now, Washington had this belief that he was destined for greatness and would tell people, you know, I'm not going to get killed. It's just not going to happen. With a white horse, he'd often be in the front of the lines urging his men on, especially if they showed any type of cowardice or reluctance. He'd be there. He was convinced he wasn't going to get shot. In fact, he was shot in 17 in the war of the French and Indian War, and the bullet ended up getting just caught in his clothing.
Wow. Well, it's such a great book. And not only are you great at reporting on sports and politics, but you also have a great way with history. Maybe you come up with some other American heroes, because we all need our American heroes, because they make us feel that other people have bad times, and Americans always rise to the occasion. So I want to thank you again for coming on the show. Great.
Thank you so much for having me on, Carol. I appreciate it.
That's Brian Kilmeade in conversation with Carol Marks. His book is titled George Washington's Secret Six, The Spy Ring That Saved the American Revolution, published by Sentinel HC. Coming up next, we're going to be joined by Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine, and then Steve Wiseman will be with us talking about health care identity theft and more. On A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security webpages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray.
check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and this is the point in the hour when we're joined by Kevin Casey. Kevin Casey is a senior correspondent on this program. He's also the vice president and executive editor of the trade magazine Talkers, which is the trade publication that serves the talk radio industry. And we take a few moments to push aside the curtain and look behind and see what's going on in the inner workings of talk media. So, Kevin, welcome back to A Touch of Gray. And I want to mention before I throw a question at you for your explanation that one of the most important things to all of us involved with Talkers Magazine is the First Amendment. We try to stay out of the political fray because there are so many different political points of view expressed on talk radio. We try to be fair and equal-handed, even-handed with all of them. But the one thing that we are very, very, very political about and active about is our support of freedom of speech and the First Amendment. So that being an issue that almost everybody in talk radio agrees on to one degree or another, this past couple of weeks there was an issue in the business that perhaps some of our listeners heard about. The critical information, the CIN, study, and maybe you could tell everybody about what it was, how it happened, and then how it was sort of chased away because of backlash from the industry regarding the FCC's sticking its nose into the business affairs and the journalistic affairs of radio news, radio and television news people.
Absolutely, Michael. This was a study that was announced almost a year ago, and it got a little steam and got created some controversy recently. Basically, what it was is, and there's a little background to this, so I won't get too deep into it, but I do have to explain this. The FCC is chartered to report to Congress every so often on barriers to entry into the broadcasting business by entrepreneurs, and that, of course, then they have sub-reports regarding minorities and their ability to enter into the business. So what the FCC did was they contracted out to create something called a critical information needs study. And what that really means is how they were going to look into this was they were going to go talk to broadcasters. It was going to start in Columbia, South Carolina, and talk to them about how they choose their news stories, how they decide what information gets out, how it's presented, etc. Well, people understandably said, well, whoa, this is not the FCC's purview to judge content in any way, shape, or form beyond regulating, you know, bad words and things like that. And but the FCC said, well, no, we need to understand the markets we regulate. Well, people weren't buying it. Broadcasters weren't buying it, especially conservative broadcasters have felt that this was a way to get around the now defunct fairness doctrine and in some way, shape, or form be able to either control content or perhaps even punish broadcasters for their choice of content. Now, the commissioners who were for this study were saying, no, that's not the intent at all. We don't regulate. We just need to understand the markets we regulate. And critics of the CIN were saying, well, okay, if that's the case, what does knowing how news stories are chosen have to do with the barriers to entry for entrepreneurs? And that question, to many, was never adequately answered. Pressure was put on, and the study was scuttled, but not before there was a lot of hubbub about it, Michael.
Yeah, and I certainly know that at Talkers we were very critical of it. We even had a headline that said, "Hey, Commish, what part of misunderstood do you not misunderstand?" Because they thought they were being misunderstood, but they were not being misunderstood. Government really should stay out of journalism in terms of regulating it, because the government, of course, is the entity that it must be scrutinized by journalists.
It was a bad idea all around. I'm not sure how it got started, but, you know, a skeptic or a cynic would tell you that a lot of bad ideas get started in Washington, and maybe they aren't even badly intended from the get-go. They just take that shape as time goes on.
Well said, well put. Thank you very much. Kevin Casey is the executive editor and vice president of Talkers Magazine. If you want to know more about talk radio and talk media, check it out. The website is absolutely open to the public. It's talkers.com. That's talkers.com. I'm Michael Harrison. You're listening to A Touch of Gray, and we'll be joined by Steve Wiseman, and the actress that played Tabitha Stevens back on Bewitched will be joining him and us next when A Touch of Gray continues.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
There are a ton of social networking websites, but one stands apart for a very special reason. This one saves lives. It's MatchingDonors.com. MatchingDonors.com links organ donors with people in need of kidney and other transplants. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. If you've ever considered becoming a living organ donor, or if you have someone in need of an organ transplant, visit MatchingDonors.com, home of the greatest gift of all, the gift of life. MatchingDonors.com.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver.
If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Time now for us to be joined by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, in conversation now with Erin Murphy. She's most likely best known for playing Tabitha Stevens on the classic television show Bewitched, and she's going to talk about that program's 50th anniversary. By the way, Entertainment Weekly recently named Bewitched one of the 100 greatest TV shows of all time.
Okay, there's always so much silly stuff online. I just have to check right off the bat. Did you really marry a guy named Darren?
I did marry a Darren, yes.
Did you just look all around to find a Darren and so it would be, so that he would be the right guy?
I like to tell people that I put an ad on Craigslist looking for a Darren.
There you go. And unlike on the TV show, you didn't replace him with another Darren, did you?
He's the first and only one.
There you go. Hey, how old were you when you were on Bewitched?
I started on the show when I was one and stayed on until I was eight. I started right before my second birthday.
Wow. So you literally were, you know, right out of the cradle. What was this like? What are your first memories of that?
I don't know where my memories actually start on the set, but my first memories are of being there. So I remember most of it. I mean, I grew up there.
It's a riot. So did you think that witchcraft and magic was just part of life? And I still think it is part of life, but did you think so?
Well, I thought it was part of life, but I also saw how it worked.
What was it like being recognized as a young child, a child star?
It's strange because since I did start in the business when I was a baby, being recognized has been the only life that I've known. So it never seems unusual to me that everywhere that people would know who I was. I don't know.
You know, a lot of child stars unfortunately go on to rather difficult lives, but you seem to be the aberration. You seem to have had a very well-adjusted life. How did you manage to escape the fate of so many child actors?
You probably hear more about the child actors who get into trouble and struggles along the way. But I think I just kind of navigated my life, you know, taking responsibility for my own decisions and also realizing that since Bewitched was so well known, I kind of felt an obligation to almost be a role model and to go out of my way to volunteer and be nice. And, you know, that's just the way I chose to lead my life.
And being grounded, is it true that you turned down a role in the Walton so you could go to Girl Scout camp?
Yes, it's true. What happened was Bewitched wasn't canceled. We took our regular hiatus, our break, and we were scheduled to come back for another season. And during that time, Elizabeth Montgomery and her husband Bill Asher decided not to continue with the show. So I already had plans to go to Girl Scout camp when I got a call about Wilson. So at that time, I was so excited about Girl Scout camp, my parents kind of let me make that decision to Girl Scout camp instead of the Waltons.
Well, and you know, and good for your parents for not kind of pushing you into that. You know, Bewitched was so popular that it even had its own flavor at Baskin-Robbins, but what was that ice cream like?
It was not one of their better 31 flavors. It was a seasonal flavor that they did during the month of October one year, and Elizabeth Montgomery and Agnes Moorehead and I did the promotions and the posters and advertising for it, but it was vanilla ice cream with little crunchy pieces of orange and then black licorice, and it was not good.
Probably looked great, you know, between your teeth as well. Ugh. So you have gone on to so many different things, including, I understand you are the mistress of mayhem?
I guess some people know me as that. I did a TV show a couple of years ago called Hulk Hogan's Celebrity Wrestling, and we were able to create our own wrestling persona. So I came up with the Mistress of Mayhem, otherwise known as Mom, M-O-M.
Yeah, nobody's messing with the Mistress of Mayhem Mom, are they?
Of course not. Everyone loves Mom.
Now, you, as we say, you do happen to be quite grounded. Actually, I think we're talking to you from your ranch.
Yes, my husband and I have a 10-acre ranch just outside of Los Angeles, and I run an equestrian center here and raise horses and alpacas and goats and chickens, and I have a knitwear company called Aaron Murphy Knits, and we film here at the ranch. So it's like a very, very time-consuming but also a wonderful place to live.
Yeah, it is. It's a great life. We're horse owners as well, and Will Rogers said it first, and Ronald Reagan picked up on it, that he said the best thing for the inside of a man is the outside of a horse.
The outside of a horse. I know that saying well, and it's true. It's funny. It's one of the things where I can't help but be grounded, even though I still go to red carpet events and get all dressed up and do the fun things. At 6 o'clock every morning, I'm up out feeding horses and animals, and I do most of the hands-on stuff here myself. So it definitely
Are you mucking stalls?
I do muck stalls. We have a ranch hand who does the stalls too, but then I kind of go through and clean up during the day. So I'm 2 stalls this morning, as a matter of fact.
All right. You can't just twitch your nose and the stalls just automatically clean up?
Oh, if we did, I'd probably have 100 horses.
Now, you know, I mentioned that quote of Will Rogers, which was later quoted by President Reagan. You actually were in a commercial with him, weren't you?
I did. When I was still a baby, second commercial I did was Ronald Reagan. Back when he was governor of California, everyone knows he was an actor, but he was the spokesperson for Boratine detergent. So we did a Boratine detergent commercial together. I've got it posted online somewhere. I think it's on my Facebook or something, but I'm toddling around in diapers, Ronald Reagan.
Oh, that's a riot. Does it surprise you that people still remember so fondly and so specifically? They'll probably tell you about, oh, no, your memory of the show is wrong. This is what it is, that people are so into Bewitched.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that's unusual about Bewitched is that we filmed the show back in the 60s and 70s, but it's been on the air continuously. We're one of the very few programs that has ever been off the air. So we're still on here in Los Angeles. We're on in prime time. So I think people grew up watching it. And at this point, grandparents know it. Parents know it. You know, little children know it since it's still on. So I think it's held up very well over time.
You know, you seem like a person that just can't seem to make up her mind what she's going to do. Is it true that you also worked as a stunt double?
I did work as a stunt double. I did some horseback riding stunts, driving stunts. I was a stunt double for Virginia Madsen and also an actress named Melissa Leo, who won an Oscar a few years ago.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say that I can't make up my mind what I want to do. My motto is kind of, I want to do everything, so it's trying to fit everything in, and if something is thrown at me, like celebrity wrestling certainly was not on my bucket list. But when they came to me with it, I thought, okay, that sounds like something unusual and fun. So I try to do a lot of different things.
Now, what did your you had 6 children?
I did. I have 6 boys.
And what did they think when Mom was on with Hulk Hogan?
They loved it. We were not a family that watched wrestling. I can honestly say I've never seen a wrestling match before I was on the show. But
probably why you agreed to it.
Kids.
That's terrific. And so what do you, outside of your the ranch and also the Aaron Murphy Knits, I'm curious about, what is that like?
Well, I raise alpacas here, and they're an animal that's still fairly new to the United States. They're from Peru and Chile. And once a year you have to shear the alpacas, and then we spin the fiber up into yarn, and I knit hats and scarves, and I give them away sometimes, and I have so many that I've started a small business and sell them as well.
Very, very cool. How many alpacas you got?
We have 11.
And they have great eyelashes.
They're beautiful animals. They always look like they're smiling, too. If you see a photograph of an alpaca, they look like they're smiling.
That's Aaron Murphy in conversation with Steve Wiseman. She played Tabitha Stevens on Bewitched, and as we mentioned, Entertainment Weekly recently named Bewitched one of the 100 greatest TV shows of all time. It is the program's 50th anniversary. Steve Wiseman will be back for some final words talking about healthcare identity theft. That's next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues. We'll be right back.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast, and we're joined again by Steve Wiseman, attorney Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire, author of such books as The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall, and the man who runs the website Scamicide.com. Steve Wiseman keeps the public up to date on the latest in these terrible scoundrel activities, and now he's here to discuss healthcare identity theft. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, the security company Redspin recently released its annual report on data breaches in the healthcare industry, and the results weren't good. Last year, there were 199 major breaches of hospitals, health insurers, and others in the healthcare field, affecting more than 7 million patients. In addition, although it was just reported in February, St. Joseph Health System, which is a 5-hospital delivery system in Texas, was hacked in December of 2013, compromising personal data, including the all-important Social Security numbers of 405,000 patients and employees. Now, one of the most disturbing elements of the hacking of these healthcare providers is that in many cases, the breaches of security were the result of stolen laptops that had unencrypted data. It just wasn't protected in any way. And astonishingly, federal law only requires healthcare providers to consider encrypting data when it really should be mandatory.
It's just another example of the fact that you're only as secure as the place with the weakest security that holds your personal data. And even if you're doing everything you possibly can to protect the security and privacy of your personal data, you can still end up as a victim of identity theft due to the negligence and carelessness of people and institutions with which you do business, particularly in the healthcare industry. So I urge you to limit as much as possible the personal information you provide to businesses and agencies. And when you must provide personal information, don't do so until you've inquired as to the security practices of the particular hospital, health provider, or company. And I may have told you this before, but not long ago I went to my eye doctor, and they asked for my social security number. And they really don't need it. They just use it as an identifier. So I asked them, I said, well, can I give you my driver's license number? And they were fine with that. So that's the kind of thing that you need to do. Also, a thing to really keep in mind for those of us 65 and older, Medicare still uses our Social Security number as the identifying number on your Medicare card, which means that anyone who sees your Medicare card can put you in jeopardy of identity theft. So, for one thing, don't carry that Medicare card around with you, and be really, really careful about who gets to see it. Because once somebody gets that Social Security number, that really is a key to identity theft. So you want to protect that as much as possible. You know, for more information, you can go to my blog, www.scamicide.com.
Always something new, always something to worry about. Thank you very much. Steve Wiseman discussing healthcare identity theft. He's written The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall, and check out his website, scamicide.com. Thank you, Steve Wiseman. Thank you, Kevin Casey. Thank you, Beverly Santinello on the front line, our producer, putting it all together. And certainly a great thanks goes to the host and founder of this program, Carol Marks. On behalf of the entire Touch of Gray broadcast team, I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.